any war always has at least two fronts. The upfront line where the fighting is done, and the home front, which provides the weapons, the supplies, the transportation, the intelligence, the political and moral support. The home front rarely gets equal credit, but World War II required such a massive buildup in such a short time, the home front effort was as impressive as the fighting in Europe or the Pacific. On factory assembly lines or in shipbuilding yards, in government offices and top-secret laboratories, on farms and ranches, the men and women who stayed behind were fully immersed in the war effort. They worked long shifts, rationed gasoline, and ate less meat. They rolled surgical dressings for the Red Cross and collected cigarettes for the boys over there. They waited for the mail and dreaded the unexpected telegram or a visit from the local pastor. Some of them, pressed into duties they had never considered, found new callings in life. It was a radical transformation of America that still is being realized today, especially for women. The manpower demands of the war created opportunities for women that were unexpected. For example, America's scientific community, which was almost exclusively a male domain, was desperate for qualified people of either gender once the shooting got underway. Gertrude Trudy Ellion was a major beneficiary, and in the end, so were the rest of us. She had graduated from high school at 15 and college at 19, summa cum laude, with a major in chemistry. She had a goal. The death of her grandfather made her determined to find a cure for cancer. She went on to earn a master's degree and set out to find laboratory work before the war began. It was a discouraging search. "They told me," she said, "they didn't want a woman in the lab. They said, we think it would be a distraction." Trudy refused to give up, but to earn a living, she would have to teach high school chemistry. There were no other jobs for a woman with her credentials. Then came Pearl Harbor, and America was at war. More than a million men would go into uniform immediately, including many from the scientific laboratories of the country. Trudy started getting calls from panicked personnel officers looking for someone with her credentials. Her first job was with the big supermarket chain A&P as a quality control officer. "I tested the acidity of the pickles, the mold in the frozen strawberries. I checked the color of the egg yolk going into the mayonnaise. It wasn't exactly what I had in mind, but it was a step in the right direction." She got out of the egg yolk business and into what she wanted when Johnson & Johnson opened a small research laboratory. The lab didn't survive, but it did give Trudy the opening she'd been waiting for. She was hired as a research assistant for the distinguished scientist, Dr. George Hitchings, at Burroughs Wellcome, the giant pharmaceutical company. At the time Ellion was hired, Hitchings was Burroughs Wellcome's lone biochemist, and he said later that even though Trudy didn't have a Ph.D., she was far and away the most knowledgeable and intelligent of the prospects. She was hired for $50 a week. It was one of the most fortuitous pairings in the history of modern medical research. Hitchings and Ellion began a 32-year collaboration that was at once astonishingly prolific and inventive. Before he died a few years ago, Hitchings told the Los Angeles Times, "When we started, it was all trial and error. You'd develop a compound and then take some kind of target, usually a mouse, plug it in and see what it did or didn't do." Hitchings and Ellion began to rewrite the how-to manual for medical research. Simply put, they developed a scientific, rational approach to the problem of understanding how a disease affects the human body. They started with how cells reproduce in their various stages. The differences in what is called nuclei acid metabolism led Hitchings and Ellion to develop a series of drugs that block the growth and reproduction of cancerous cells and other harmful organisms without destroying the normal human cells. It is difficult to overstate the lasting impact of their new approach in medical research. It is at the heart of cancer and antiviral research today. Over the years, they developed drugs that were effective in fighting childhood leukemia, the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis, gout, and kidney stones. Ellion's research in the antiviral area also led to the development of the most effective treatment of herpes virus infections. So the range of her work with Dr. Hitchings was impressive. From life-threatening diseases to socially embarrassing and physically painful cold sores. Moreover, their approach led to the development of the most effective early AIDS treatment, the drug AZT. As their joint projects broke through one scientific barrier after another, they remain laboratory partners in every sense of the phrase. They shared credit equally, and they were jointly dedicated to the idea of work, work, work. They stayed on at Burroughs Wellcome when it moved from New York to the Research Triangle in North Carolina outside of Raleigh-Durham in 1970. Later, the company was bought by the British pharmaceutical giant Glaxo. By then, they were established stars, and they had a research staff of 1,500. Trudy Elliott was a department head and a mentor to a new generation of scientists, including many women. Karen Brion, who now heads the Department of Virology at Glaxo Wellcome, says, "I learned so much from her because she was a leader, an excellent scientific mentor, and not just a role model for women. In one sense, Trudy is atypical because she didn't marry or have a family, but she made such a difference by just being a woman and showing she could assume the level of responsibility, be an effective manager and scientific leader, and have the credibility she does in the scientific world." Trudy gave up on the idea of marriage when her fiancé died in the early 40s. That loss, she says, reinforced her devotion to science and research. Besides, she points out, it wasn't an option open to women with careers. If a woman got married, she was often fired. If she had a child, no question, out she'd go. There was no such thing as maternity leave. "I'm supposed to be a role model for girls. I don't know about that. What I like to do is encourage young women, and I think I succeed at that. I do tell them you can have both, motherhood and a career, but not 100% of both. You can have maybe 80% of each." For her part, Trudy created an extended family. Her brother Herbert, a physicist living in California, she says, had the foresight to have four children. There are also the graduate students she advises at Duke University Medical School and all those scientists who worked with her over the years. One of them, Dr. Thomas Krenitsky, who now has his own pharmaceutical company, is in awe of Trudy. "You have to remember," he says, "when Trudy and Hitchings and their team started working with nucleic acids and cells, we didn't have any idea they were the chemical basis for heredity. That discovery came 10 years later. They were way ahead of their time." Trudy and George were more than just brilliant scientists. They were humanists. They were interested in the human condition. They weren't out just for themselves. In 1988, George Hitchings and Trudy Ellion, a team born out of the wedlock of the manpower shortage of the war years, won the Nobel Prize for Medicine. But it was not the ultimate recognition for their work. They both have said their greatest gratification came from people whose lives were saved or suffering relieved because of their devotion to the use of science to help people. Still, Trudy wonders, "I don't know if I would ever have gotten into a research lab without the men being gone." So it is one of the many ironies of World War II, a terrible time of great suffering, that it also produced in its own way one of the great humanitarian scientists of the second half of the 20th century.